What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Come welcome one and all to Knife Talk, the podcast. If you're into knives in any sort of way, we're here every Monday morning with myself, Craig Lockett of Chop Knives, Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, and Mareko Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts. It's nearly here. Christmas is nearly here. How are you all doing? You all ready?
I'm ready, baby.
You ready? Okay, let's start with you. How are things?
Busy. I'm super busy. This is the past. I've been by myself since November, and I'm the most efficient. I don't remember being as efficient as I am now, and I feel great. And I'm just, we're knocking it out. Sales are good. I'm keeping up with, you know, everything. And I'm just like, when I come in the shop, it's no time for bullshit. No, nothing frivolous. I'm like, I'm locked in, as the young people say.
Yeah. What's your plans for Christmas? Are you taking a break of any sort?
Today's Thursday. Tomorrow I'm picking my daughter up. She's coming back from school. And we're going to my sister who passed away, where there is an art show for her work. She's an awesome sculptor. So they saved it. And my other sister's picking us all up, and we're all going to go to this art show in Long Island. So it's going to be very bittersweet. I'm really excited to see it. My sister was incredibly – we inspired each other, and her work and my work were very kind of like similar. There was a lot of similarities, which is really, really kind of fun to talk about. The hardest part is she's not here to talk to her about it, but it's we're really excited about that. And then for Christmas, we usually have some stragglers who are not. My next door neighbor comes over the day before Christmas, and we do Feast of Seven Fishes, that kind of like different all that. And then my old coworker, John Ledford,
what's the Feast of Seven Fishes?
It's this Italian thing. It's Italian thing that's like kind of caught on, and it's like the night before Christmas, and then you eat. You know, it's like you have, because it's a, you know, the sacrament. You're not supposed to eat meat, I guess. I'm just saying this from half a Roman Catholic. I only know that as half a Roman Catholic, quarter of Italian, and you eat seven different fishes, and they represent something. So you make dishes with the fish, and it's a lot of fun. And we've been doing it for the past 5 years, and it's been a lot of fun because we've tried to figure out what should we put in. Now we need two more fish, and you know, it's fun. So we're going to have my next-door neighbor, who's always alone. His wife passed away, and then we're going to have my old coworker, John Ledford, comes over, and that's fun. And Lila's going to be home, and then I don't know what else is going on. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to Christmas. It's nice to. I'm just excited that my daughter's coming home. It's been enough.
Yes.
It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. It's enough. And I'm a year older, and I feel good. Yeah. And I got my wife took me out. She got me tattooed, and we had some nice dinner with some friends. I drank. I'm too old to be drinking. I had a couple drinks, and I had a fucking terrible hangover the next day. And I'm just like getting too old for this shit. And everything's good.
What's the tattoo? What did you have?
Well, I've been going to this guy. This friend of mine opened this tattoo place in our town. I've been friends with him since the beginning. And he's got all these young guys. I know all of them. And I've been talking to one of them. I wanted a token, like the old tokens for New York City. So I wanted something like, you know, a New York thing, but not too, you know, not like, a, you know, the Yankee symbol.
Like and you used on your foldables.
Exactly. So there's a specific type of Subway token that was used when I was a kid, and it has a pentagram hole in it, and the pentagram represent each side of the pentagram represents a different borough of New York. It just happens to be that the 316th pin fits perfect.
Sounds like alumni shit to me. That
You mean Illuminati shit?
Yeah, the Illuminati, sorry.
Alumni is like your college, dude.
Sorry, you're right. Sorry, yeah.
Illuminati, so, yeah. So I've been talking to my guy about this for years, and my wife just called him up, said, would you give him this goddamn tattoo? And went in, and it was the most... I had never fallen asleep getting a tattoo before. I've been sitting in chairs for years, and I fell asleep, and my wife...
Oh, wow.
It was really funny.
So, nice.
Yeah. So where is it on your body?
It's on my ball bag, frankly.
Of course, yeah.
One of my balls has got a token tattoo on it. No, it's on my my arm somewhere.
Okay,
you know.
Nice.
How you guys doing?
Okay. I'm good. I can't remember where we left this last time with me and my getting my root nerve injection, and I.
Yeah, you were on
December the 18th.
You were supposed to.
Yeah, and I didn't. But it's a week today, December the 18th, that's happening. So a week before Christmas. But I'm okay. I'm back on all the pills. So I'm okay. I can walk around and I can sort of get around. But I'm just tired, constantly, like beyond belief tired. Come sort of 1 p.m., I'm done.
Wow.
And the doctors say that's like managing the pain, that is. You know, your body's just saying, you know, you need
Give
to stop
up.
Kind of thing. Yeah, but like never been this tired where you literally could fall asleep when people are talking to you, you know. I've never been like this. But
what do they
I'm
think
back
it
the...
is
but it's a trapped nerve. It's they know it's a trapped nerve, and it's so basically where you have your spine, you have your, you know, your vertebrae, a nerve has gone through and it's pinched out the other side and it's up against my spine. So I keep getting these spasms and stuff, but I'm back on the pills.
Shit.
and they're helping massively. But
what
yeah,
you have to do to get
just...
it repaired.
Sorry?
What do you have to do to get it repaired?
Well, they're going to inject it first. So basically, they inject a steroid actually into the nerve, so which is like in my spine. And apparently, that gives you instant relief. The only way to really to fix it is either to have surgery, which is really invasive, apparently, or give it steroids, and hopefully it'll work its way back over time. But you won't be in any pain whilst it's doing it. So that's the plan.
Wow.
So if... we're going to do that, and if it's still crazy in sort of 2-3 months, then it'll be surgery. So we're hoping not. But the people who I've spoken to who've had these injections in the nerves, they say you walk out like a different person. It's like it's instant, you know. So
wow.
So let's see. I'm certainly hoping so. Yeah.
Are you looking forward to the holiday season?
Massively. So we're in the new house. We just feel really settled here. Like. Really quickly. The kids started school this week. It's gone like, it couldn't have gone better. Really couldn't have gone better. They're absolutely loving it. So they had a school play, the nativity play on their second day. And they were giving lines to learn. And, you know, Buddy was dressed up as a sheep and all these things, you know. And it's just really nice. And yeah, they're really enjoying it. So we really couldn't have gone better. We're really pleased, actually. So yeah, we're looking forward to now Christmas. We're in the house. We've got family all around, and we intend to go nowhere. You know, Christmas.
That's great.
Open door here. People can come in as they please, and yeah, we're just gonna relax.
Rebecca, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm getting over a cold. I'm a little congested right now. Actually, I had a bit of a fever yesterday. My kid's been wrestling. I think I mentioned before, and I think last Sunday there was a tournament, and I picked it up from that. I started feeling it on Tuesday, and then Wednesday kicked my ass, and so we're here recording now on Thursday. Still a bit exhaustion, a lot of sinus pressure. Yesterday, I always run hot, so I knew something was wrong when it was like 70 degrees in the house, and I was freezing fucking cold. Mm. And so I've just been trying to take care of myself and lay low a little bit. Next week's a sharpening week. Last week I was working on spa dang some knives. I think I've talked about this as well before. Like I try to call my year early, just because the holidays have a tendency, at least for me, to be very stressful, and I don't do well with that stress, the extra stress and timeline, and people wanting gifts at certain times and all this stuff. So I try to call it early. So I'm just kind of like laying back and taking it easy and kind of doing some cleanup around the shop and doing these little futsy little spa day stuff with these knives and just kind of laying low. It was funny, Jeff, when you were saying you fell asleep in the tattoo chair. Actually, I sent you a post. So I saw this post the other day where this guy, he had himself intubated, which is basically put under anesthetic. And he's sitting there getting tattooed by like four or six different tattoo artists all in one, just to get all this fucking, like a full body tattoo done in one go, which sounds like a fucking nightmare.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was talking about that with my guy last week, because I had read about it a while ago. So what's happening is all these rich guys want to get full sleeves and suits, you know, tattoo suits, but they don't want to spend the time and the energy. So what these tattoo parlors have started to do has do these pop-ups, and they'll rent out a dentist's office or a doctor's clinic, and they'll hire anesthesiologists and nurses and these rich people. And apparently, I was talking to my guy about it, and he was saying, yeah, the first person to do this was Travis Barker of, Green Day? What was
Blink
Travis
Barker?
Blink 182.
Blink 182. Yeah. He was in a plane accident, and his body was burned. He wanted to get all his tattoos done, and he just didn't want to sit through it again. So he did this. They hire out, like I said, they hire out a dentist's office. They get an anesthesiologist, a couple nurses. They fucking, you know, they breathe for him. They anesthesia local, and, you know, they hold on to him. And then they get six guys, and it's like, you know, like a car, you know, and they're changing the tires off an Indy 500 car, you know, and they're all working on this motherfucker. Well, everybody gets a limb, and they just, you know, kick the shit out of this guy. And then, you know, when he's done, they do it in one shot, and then he leaves in a wheelchair.
Body bag.
In a wheelchair. Christ. Wow, that's the other. So I was talking to my guy about that, and he's just like, yeah, this is bullshit. You know, you got to earn that shit. And I was just like, yeah, man. I've been getting tattooed for 25, 30 years, for over 30 years. This sucks. And it's, you know, these rich people with their fucking bullshit Ozempic style tattoos, and fuck that. And we were laughing about it. But it was like, all I could think of is, the longest I've sat in a chair in one session was 4 hours. 4 hours straight on one tattoo. Sometimes they want to do a little bit of work, and then they let it heal, and then they'll color it the next time. And I was just I'll just sit through it. Just if you can do it, I can do it. And the guy was like, yeah, I was super pumped. It was like my arm was like hamburger. At the end of four hours.
You obviously get pain when it's happening, when they're doing it. But do you get pain afterwards, like the next day?
Like 2 days later, it feels like a bad sunburn.
Yeah.
So right, like okay. about a bad sun, it feels like a bad sunburn. But other than that, it's like, you know, you get used to it. The funny thing is the first time I got tattooed, I started passing out when I was like 18. I got real scared because Dad was going to kick my ass and, you know, all that. And then I went to other tattoo places and actually got tattooed with my business partner, Tony, before we were working together. And then the thing is when somebody who first gets in the tattoo parlor, they'll turn to someone getting tattooed and they'll say, does it really hurt? And if you're like old school, you're supposed to say, yeah, it fucking sucks, you know, and you're supposed to make them all nervous. I remember a number of years ago, I was sitting in this guy, I felt like the old guy in the tattoo parlor, I fucking hate this shit. And this woman, I guess she was her first tattoo, she's getting on her ankle. And she goes, I have a question. Does it really hurt as bad as they say? And I said, yeah, it's really bad. And she just looked at me, just got really pained. And then my friend who was tattooing was like, Jesus Christ, Jeff, help me out here. I'm like, I'm old school. You're supposed to make them scared.
Yeah.
So
I will say ankle is not a great place to get a tattoo. It is painful there.
Ankles, you have an ankle tattoo?
I do, yeah.
What do you got?
I have old alchemical symbols for iron and wood.
Ah.
Look at you. Wow.
So you saying that you fell asleep in the tattoo chair reminded me of me when I go to the dentist. I almost always fall asleep in the dental chair.
Yeah, I can fall asleep in the dental chair.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, yeah. So, but other than that, I just been laying low. Oh, so I have a follow up about which I actually sent you guys a picture of the other day or post of the guy. I know I was bitching and moaning about this guy.
Don't say his name, but let's talk about it.
I won't. But rightfully so. I think, and I'd be curious what you guys' take on this, because I have a hard time not feeling a little bit defeated. But this guy that made this video about the gradient and all this stuff, like basically he's teaching my techniques, which is how I part of how I earn my money is going around teaching. And then somebody's learning from other people my stuff and then teaching it to putting together like tutorials on YouTube and then posting it up for the world to see. He's now working with a commercial manufacturer. I imagine they reached out to him. He's got a lot of visibility, and so there's an opportunity to capitalize on that. And so this company reached out to him, I'm assuming, and said, we want to do a knife with you. And the knife he came up with looks like a fucking clone of my knife, like almost down to the T. There's like some of the facets on the handle are moved slightly, but to me, that is not an original idea. And it's like, it's a whole signature series that he's doing thing. And I'm just like, how is that a signature series? All the shit that you have on that is literally my, like all the bunch of stuff that I originated, my style and my design, to the profile, the handle, the angle of the bolster, the facets on the handle. It's just fucking crazy. And I'm just like, and I know I can message this guy and bitch and moan about it to him and be like, what the fuck are you doing? But at the same time, I don't think he's going to do anything about it because, honestly, he didn't really do anything about it last time. And I know, like, we had this conversation or had a short conversation earlier about a few or several episodes back about, like, about AI and how, like, somebody could basically clone your work. And at a certain point, like, especially if it's a commercial manufacturer, like, unfortunately, like, unless you got the money to fight their lawyers, like, there's not a lot you can do about it. But what's really disappointing about this is somebody that's also in the knife, like, a custom maker that's in the industry.
Yeah.
He's made a tiny adjustment to one of the facets of the overall aesthetic of the knife, and then he's calling it a completely new, different knife. And it's like, no, it's not.
One of the things I notice is when you send it to us is the width and the connection between the width of the handle versus the height of the handle was like kind of like I felt it was very much. I thought there was a lot more than just the facets. I didn't even look at the facets. Like it.
No, it's really not just the facets. It's like
it looked like your knife. It looked like your knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. It very much looks like one. Even like the spacer being used.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck about people making these little loophole decisions of changing the facets and stuff like that. I mean, it looks like your knife. I don't need to hear anymore. When I saw it, I got pissed.
It's quite intentional.
Frankly, it annoyed me. It annoyed me. Actually, it didn't annoy me. It pissed me off because it's very clear that somebody's trying to do these horseshit loophole. This is the reason why knife making is not sculpture. You know, some of these motherfuckers legitimately think that they're Christopher Columbus on this shit. And you have to come to the conclusion, that, as I've been saying for years, these motherfuckers are thieves. And it's either, I don't know, you gotta get past it. Or you have to, you know, we got an hour and a half to radio to burn. So, I mean, this is a perfect place to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately I'll probably just have to get past it. But it's really disappointing.
Yeah.
The guy is a very talented maker. But the problem is that I think he maybe struggles with creativity. And, like, a lot of the work that he does are like either historical reproductions, which is what he's known for, or especially when he does culinary knives, like a lot of, especially the handle, the blade, or even the Damascus pattern styles are all replications of my stuff, which as part of Jeff, you would probably attest, like as an artist who's developing their process and figuring out like you replicate other people's stuff until you figure out your own style.
Like, Not really.
Well, you practice other people's techniques, right?
No, I mean, when you're making sculpture, you're trying to come up with an idea, and then you're evolving that idea. But I'm not saying I want to make a fucking sculpture like that dude. I mean, Fleabags do, but I mean, I don't.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, I understand if you're like getting into it and you are taking inspiration to start, but then to continue to just do that and then push it off and sell it as your own, one, because that's all you've done, and two, because you've justified it to yourself in your own mind. I've made a slight adjustment to where this facet lands on the handle, therefore it's a completely different thing. It totally, it very much is not. Because even in my own handles, none of the facets land in the exact same spot, but the overall aesthetic and style is for sure mine. And I think the thing that's really frustrating is that it's hard to distinguish yourself in this craft and your aesthetic of your knives and your work. And I've done a lot of work. And use a lot of creative problem solving and figuring shit out to make my work stand apart. And then this guy is just like, he's taken a lot of inspiration from it, but he hasn't really done much to develop his own style. And then a company reaches out to him saying they want to make a production knife with him. And so what does he do? He does only what he's known, which is replicating my work rather than coming up with his own shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, what the fuck do you do? Like, unfortunately, I can't, it's just, I can't do
it. It's a tale as old as time, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
What exactly. I'd say is people who are buying your stuff are buying your stuff because it's you. You put yourself out there. You, yeah, for sure. You know, you're.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You are, I hate to use the word, but you're a personality within the knife making world, you know?
Yes.
Sure. And people who buy your stuff buy it because they're bought into you, not necessarily that particular knife, maybe. Sure. And I think people who buy into this knife, they're buying this because it's a cheap version to get something that's similar to your knife. That's what I'd say.
There's a few other layers to this. One is it's about personal character.
Yeah.
You know, I had the opportunity. So I said this before, but I'll say it again. I worked with Lynn Ray to do a watercolor of his production, how he does X-ray knives, because I wanted to give it to him.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to. I'm not selling it. Down the line, if we come up with a book, I might ask for his permission to use it. But if he said no, I wanted this to be his. And I made a couple. And I remember my Tony said, "Hey, maybe we should do some of those for the culinary collection." And I immediately said, "No, this isn't my knife. I don't want anything to do with it. If I can't do my own shit, then that's my problem. I'm not taking a design idea from a guy who, you know, told me how he does it, and I'm not doing that." And it got to the point where I was just like, "Well, we're not even going to talk about it anymore." I'm like, "I'm not going to do that." And it's based off the character of this person. Obviously, he doesn't care, or obviously, he can live with it. You know, that's the other thing. It's obvious he's aware that, you know, you had a situation with him before, but it didn't change his mind. And now he's doing the same thing, and obviously he can live with it. So it's like, that's a character thing. You know, I don't know this person. I don't know anything about him, but it tells me a lot about personal character. The other thing is we have to learn how to stop using the word inspiration in the way we're using it. Because I have perfect examples. I've been chatting with my old college roommate, Miles, who is an awesome bronze caster. We were roommates together. We talked on my birthday. It was so much fun. My roommates together. We were studio mates together. His work and my work couldn't be any different. I was inspired by his work ethic. I was inspired by his ability to be fired up to make sculpture. He inspired me to make my sculpture. If I'm inspired by an artist, I'm inspired not to make their shit. You know, I don't make other people's shit. And that's the difference. Inspiration, not necessarily, you know, when these people, they use the word inspiration. It's supposed to be this, like, what is it? An invisible trophy? It's like, it's kind of saying I'm taking it, but I'm like honorably taking it. No, it's you fucking just say, I took this idea from this guy. Just say don't say inspiring anymore. Just say, I'm fucking taking this from Mareko. You know, because that's what you're doing, because obviously you're upset about it. I'm upset, but listen to me. I'm fine. I have nothing to do with it. I'm pissed off.
Well, it's just, I feel like he's justified in his own head. He's made like a 10% or 5% adjustment to the overall design, and all of a sudden that makes it his.
Fucking nerds.
And that's, like, it's just, and like, he's justifying himself, whether he's just completely ignorant or he's just come to the conclusion in his head, oh, because I've made this adjustment, it's now my thing. It's like none of that style would have existed if I hadn't done it first. None of it. Maybe somewhere down the road eventually, but like with all of that that's in that handle, it are all because of me.
Has anybody brought it up to him?
Sorry, say.
Has anybody brought it up to him?
Yeah, a friend of mine confronted him on it, and they had a conversation about it. But it sounds like he still doesn't.
But he's aware. He's not like this is parallel. This is not parallel thinking.
Yeah, no. Okay. What were you saying, Craig?
He's listening. have you spoken to the manufacturing company that he's working with?
Actually, I did. I was just as I was talking, I had that thought, and so that'd be funny to reach out to them and be like, "Hey, this is a fucking ripoff." My word.
I don't know
what that would even do. Like, if they even fucking give a shit.
Do you think that this is a company that cares?
No, probably not.
Yeah, so, you know, who cares?
But due diligence, I don't know. It takes very little effort on my part to just be like, hey. But
I don't think it would make a difference. I mean, unless you're, we're not talking about legal action, but I mean, unless that's in the chamber, there's no point. I mean, I don't know. There was a guy who started to do my knives, and I felt as though I just have to, that's just the way it is. And, you know, here I throw myself around about, you know, people. I'm like, anytime someone does an offset straight that looks a little too close to mine, I'm thinking to myself, where do you learn how to do that shit? You know? So I throw myself around over here, but at the same time, I also feel as though that's part of the reason why I do the colorful handles and the asymmetrical, because I'm just like, I have to carve my own way and, you know, make it so these motherfuckers have a hard time copying me. And then when they do, people say something. So,
yeah. Well, and part of his justification, I looked through the email or through the message chain with my buddy that he had, and he's like, you know, I've taken inspiration definitely from Mareko, but also from other makers, and he named off a couple makers. And I was like, those guys also took inspiration from me. It still comes back to me, because again, if I hadn't done that first, they wouldn't have been doing it. And so it's just
This is a character issue.
Yeah. And whatever he can do to justify to himself that he didn't do anything wrong, it's fucking disappointing, especially from somebody who is obviously a very talented maker, but it seems like they have very little creativity. So great, you can make the shit out of stuff, but you're not coming up with your own stuff to make.
Yeah,
you're not coming up with your own styles and designs and techniques. Like, what are you doing? You're just a copy machine.
Mimic. Yeah, that's what it should be called. The knife should be the mimic.
The mimic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, it just gets me crazy, too, because there's this... most knife makers want to be referred to as artists, and there's all sorts of the idea. I get messages, people saying, well, you know, artists steal, too, which is true. But if you're trying to be thought of as someone who's a serious person... You know, when I say serious person, I don't mean they're just, like, wearing a tie all the time. It's like they do what they say they're going to do. They're not frivolous with their time and their energy. They're motivated. They're doing all the hard work to make sure these things work. You know, that's part of character as well. You know, and people, these goddamn people want to be called artists, but then they're just like, you know, copying things that they see and doing it's horseshit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, dude. I got pissed off when you sent that, frankly.
Yeah,
I was,
sorry.
I wasn't trying to piss you off. I was pissed at you for sending it to me at my bedtime because I wanted to go to bed. I didn't want to get hot and bothered before I went to sleep.
Yeah,
got me all pissed off before bedtime. That ain't right.
Right. Well, and I think at the same time, like, I keep trying to, like, talk myself down. And I'm like, okay, you're going to put stuff out in the world, like, that. Some people might copy it. It's just, again, it's for me, it's really disappointing to see a maker who is obviously very talented in making things just basically
to be so blatant.
Yeah, blatantly blatant. Straight up copy
yeah.
it and then peddle it as his own. And also be unwilling to really like make any change or any adjustments. Like, when I talked to him in the past, he just like, I don't know. I am having a hard time talking right now. It's just frustrating. But I also at the same time don't think there's unfortunately much to do about it other than to publicly shame them. But obviously we're not doing that right now, but it's tempting.
Don't do it. But it's just don't like, do it. Don't do just it. I have to answer the fucking messages.
Be the big man, Mareko. Be the big
be
man.
The no,
it's,
big
just,
man.
It's just also like I would expect or not be surprised to see a commercial like if Shun was like, we came up with this new design, and I'd be like, you motherfuckers, that's my fucking design.
Right.
But at the same time, like, what can you do? But somebody who's in, like, in the industry as a custom maker, blatantly doing that is what's really fucking disappointing and frustrating about
this. It's a character issue, dude.
Yeah.
It's a character issue. This
take
is...
it. Take a deep breath, both of you, okay?
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.
Evenheat-kiln.com. All American made. Right, shall we do some questions?
We have great feedback. We have questions. And before we get into it, I want you beautiful listeners. I almost called you something else. I want you to start
you,
to...
You motherfucker.
Yeah. I want you to go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram and send us your beefs for the 8th annual All Beef Review. I'm about... 3/4 there, but I like a lot extra. And then maybe in the June, July, in the January, we could do some beef runoff. That every time I say runoff, Craig hates it when I say beef runoff. Beef
beef runoff is just disgusting.
But I want to make sure we got a good long one. So send me. And P.S. Don't say names. I've had to disregard someone's where people are saying other people's names. Don't say names, please.
Yeah. Not here for shame. We're here for the game.
For fun, guys.
Yes. Okay. So if you don't know what beef is, we've done it every year. This is, seventh, eighth year, whatever it may be now. Eighth year. Something that's grinding your gears. And it could be knife-related. It could just be life-related, whatever it is. Something grinding your gears. This is your opportunity to sort of cast all that off you. You know, start a new year with all the beefs are gone.
Mareko gave us beef. He gave us a good beef.
Mareko... Exactly, that's a good beef.
That's top choice beef right there.
So we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Send us your beefs and any questions that you may have. And I've got a question here from Big Hill Forge. He says, hello, gentlemen. Is there a good way to etch a logo in Damascus after it has already been etched in ferric chloride?
It would be really funny if he said, I'm making this production for the knives. Mareko, how do you do it? So you can tell me how I can do it.
Lasers. I think once you've already etched for topography, it's hard to use a screen. The little silk screens for the personalizer. The best bet. Because what's going to end up... I mean, you can still get a mark, but the problem is the etching fluid floods all over the place in the topography of the Damascus pattern. And so the move is... I've always etched my maker's mark before I etch for depth. In Damascus, Damascus. But if you got to go in afterwards, laser is definitely a way to go. There's tons of people, I'm sure, all around you who can offer this a service. The trick is going to get the maker's mark converted to the proper file or artwork that can be used for the laser. But other than that, honestly, that should be pretty straightforward as well. It's just a matter of figuring it out.
Most software for those lasers now, they've got a system where you could even take a photo of it and it'll sort of trace it for you and stuff. Yeah, yeah. It's simple now.
Yeah, they got to vectorize it, right? Turn it into an Adobe Illustrator.
Like an SVG. Yeah.
But that would be the easiest solution. And it's going to cost you, it might even cost you $50. But I'll tell you what, that's a $50 well, or even $100 well spent, rather than fucking around with messing up the etch and having to rehand sand the blade and or even regrind the blade and all this bullshit that you might potentially have to do. Just do it. Just go get it lasered. I'm sure you can get it done for $50. Or less, and good to go.
Cool.
All right. Okay. This next one's from Manny Fernandez. He says, that enigma of a man Craig has left me wondering, how did he finally get the safe open? Penetrating oil, and why is he going on an impromptu 20-hour drive?
Manny Fernandez works with the FBI. He's got a lot of questions. Jesus Christ, Manny. What are you, the police? What are you asking so many questions for?
the top.
Manny, these things aren't linked. It's not the safe isn't linked to why I need to go on a 24-hour drive. No, so the safe, we got rubber mallet. So we've been putting penetrating oil in it for a few days around this sort of mechanism, and then just hitting it with a rubber mallet. And it seems to have just loosened any sort of rust that was on the edge. And then it just twisted and popped out. But yeah, there was nothing in there. If you heard last week's show, you'd have known it was a complete waste of time. And why the 20-hour drive? Well, guess who's not doing the 24-hour drive? Guess who's got a courier going for him on Monday morning? So I'm not doing the drive. I just thought it's too far in this sort of state that I'm in. Especially this time of year as well, where roads are going to be crazy, crazy, crazy. And this is like, it's in the highlands of Scotland, like right up north, and this crazy weather we're having. So I managed to find a specialist sort of courier service, and they're going up and they're picking it up and bringing it back to me Tuesday morning.
Picking
so they're leaving Monday, come back Tuesday.
What up?
It's a studio console, which is basically a big fancy mixing desk, basically, but a huge one that you get in a recording studio. So that's the new project. I don't think I've mentioned it on the show, actually.
No.
So with the house, there's another little coach house next to it. That's going to be a proper commercial studio. I've been gathering bits, buying bits, and getting that ready. So yeah, hopefully by spring, I'll have a proper studio here with a proper live room, a proper control room, and there's going to be some sleeping areas as well for artists. They can come and stay for a few days and record stuff. So,
part of Flip Flop Records.
No. So Flip Flop is something that I do with a friend of mine. But this will be purely my own thing.
What will the name of it be?
Blackmail Records. So the area we're in is called Blackmail. So it makes sense. Just call it
that. That's a great name.
Wow, what a name.
Spade to spade. Blackmail. Yes. So yeah, Blackmail. Blackmail, yes. So yeah, it's really exciting. So I cannot wait for this console to arrive. It's like a.
See when you.
Yeah, it's cool.
When you say it, it sounds like a Jamaican accent saying blackmail.
Blackmail. Yeah. Yeah.
My bad.
It's like the whole beer.
Sorry, guys.
Thing,
I thought that was going to be better than it was. You know, like, yeah. We just got to swing your bitches, ladies and germs.
Do you know the breakfast thing? Do you know what Jamaica man has beer for breakfast?
Go ahead.
It comes in a can. It's a beer can.
All right, guys. Two strikeouts. We got one more to go, and then this fucking show is over. I tell you what, 36 and two bombs. God.
I thought that's nothing wrong with saying that.
No, but I mean, neither one of them were funny, clearly. I mean, that's the best part. No, I mean, we both really trying to fucking get that out, and nothing happened. Two strikeouts.
Yeah, dead air.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, who's taking the next one?
It's like reeling from those two bombs. The next one comes from our man, Noah Rockland. Hi, Knife Talk. Question. So I have my shop in my garage, which is no insulation or heat. I've been considering putting up my belt grinder in the basement of my house during the winter to make grinding more comfortable. The thing is, the basement would have no ventilation, and I'm concerned about making a huge mess, and it doesn't feel quite right. So my question is, would you put a grinder in your basement or just suck it up and work out in the cold? The base is totally closed. The basement is totally closed off from my house, and the door is always shut. All right, guys. Nice. You have an uninsulated garage. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, what's to say that in the basement, whatever, it's got no ventilation. That's the worry there, because there's just going to be shit everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere. So you're going to need a way to, as I call it, spuff everything out the window, basically, you know, get rid of everything.
Yeah,
otherwise everything is going to be terrible. And it'll settle, but even then everything's just going to be thick with dust, and it'll always just be in the air. It wouldn't be, even those air scrubbers wouldn't handle it. You need some sort of air flow, you know, taking stuff out of the building. It wouldn't be a nice environment. Really wouldn't.
Yeah, no, I think you would definitely have to figure out a way to ventilate the air, as well as collect as much dust as possible. Obviously in a very safe way, because sparks can cause fires pretty quickly when you're collecting dust, but there are definitely ways for that to be done. But otherwise, like, that my shop is basically a garage, It does have insulation, but it's the most piece of shit insulation that exists. And so it gets pretty cold in the shop, and it's tough. But I think this was just what I had to do is deal with it. But Jeff, you have experience working in the basement, don't you?
I have worked in the basement, and I wasn't crazy about it. I also worked in an uninsulated shed, which was terrible. And now I'm in a shop that I have. I felt a year ago, I felt like it wasn't holding the heat in as well as it could, and it was because of the garage door. And I went to Home Depot and I sent a message to this guy. And I sent pictures of what I have. I found that if you go to the insulation area of like a Home Depot or Lowe's or something like that, they have these big 4x8 panels of inch thick insulated boards. Like insulation, yeah. But they're meant for the side of a door or side of a house, you know, but they're 4x8 feet by like inch, maybe even closer to 2 inches. And I got 3 of them, and then I put them against our garage door, which is, you know, basically a steel roll down door. And then the great thing is it made a huge difference in terms of like just kind of insulating it a little bit. And then in the summertime, I can just move them to the side. Like they're very light and they can move them. And I think that there are ways in which you can try to insulate your garage in ways that I'm assuming if it's an attached garage, that there is parts that are insulated. In my mind, I'm imagining that probably the not insulated part are the doors. Usually that's the part that's not insulated. And if you can just focus on the ways in which to insulate those, I think you're in better shape. I don't like being in the garage, in the basement, because I always feel like, what if they're gas pipes? Or what if there's something in there? What if it's, I'd rather be in a bigger space, like a unfinished garage, so I can kind of manage all the things that can go wrong in the house. But I would concentrate, and I think I paid like, each sheet of these boards was like maybe $50. So you had $150, and it was a huge difference.
Sure.
So that's what I would do.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff. The fire concern, or the concern of safety in the house, or grinding in the bottom of the house or under the house, is like the chance of the steel wool that kind of builds up from grinding. That stuff lights up like so easily. And
I found a long time afterwards as well. So if you find a bit and you blow on it, you'll see the embers will just spark back up again.
Right. Yeah. So the potential of accidentally setting the house on fire, like that's the last thing you want to do as well.
Don't talk about your home insurance. We've gone through that again. Yeah. No. They'll void your shit so fast they'll make your head spin.
Yeah. So I would try to keep it in the garage or separate from the house as best as you can. But a ventilation system of some sort, warmer clothes, and you should be in good working order.
Didn't we have that one person said I wanted to call an insurance company, and as soon as they called the insurance company, the wife called the insurance company about that he bought a new kiln and he bought a new grinder, and then the wife called the insurance company. And the insurance company voided their home insurance for just even like mentioning it or something like that. You gotta be careful, guys.
So as well as the safety, it's ventilation as well, because and they go hand in hand, because if you're not ventilating out, and you know, let's say you've got sawdust everywhere and then you've got sparks flying everywhere as well, you're fucked, basically, you know.
Now this next one is very important, but we also need to get to some listener feedback, so
okay, Craig. Whatever you want to do. Well, let's do this one quick because it's an easy one.
Ronald Handmaid says, "Hi guys, I'm about halfway through the latest episode." Well, this is an old question, but that's fine. "And I had to stop and ask the question because it's nagging me. Craig, what the hell is the guitar that your friend is selling? 190,000 pounds and climbing? That's insane. What the hell was that all
about?" Yeah. Well, it's quite a special guitar. So, well, the actual guitar is only just quite a cheap Takamine. So what's that, $500-$600, I suppose. But my friend was an engineer on two of the biggest Oasis albums, the second one, the What's the Story and Be Here Now, the big albums. He was engineer on that. There's a fight in the studio. His own guitar got broken, so Noel Gallagher gave him this guitar. But this is the guitar that was used for Wonderwall. That was used for the famous Nebworth gigs. That was used in Mustique to write the third album. So Johnny Depp was using the guitar as well in the studio. So it's quite a famous guitar. So that was up for auction. He didn't actually sell it at 190. He wanted more for it. I think the reserve was $220,000. And that's pounds, which is what? Probably about $270, $280. So he didn't actually sell it, so he still got it. It's a very sort of special guitar, not necessarily because it sounds great or the guitar itself is great, but just the history around it. It's that guitar made millions of teenagers pick up guitars and learn guitars. It's an important guitar, you know.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Wow. That's it. So shall we do some feedback?
Before we do it, I think we should hit this last one. I know that I'm looking at it from Alpha Blade and Forge. I think it's a great, great question.
Yeah. Go for it.
Miracle, you want to read this one?
Yeah. It says Alpha Blade and Forge. He says, hey, gentlemen, what happens when demand for your knives become greater than your ability to produce them? Should I try to grab all the orders I can, strike while the iron is hot, or is it best to know my limits and respectfully decline orders that I don't think I can complete in a timely fashion? Thanks for your priceless advice and quality entertainment, Alpha Blade and Forge.
Priceless what do you, advice. Look at
priceless.
You.
Yeah, well, we're going to have some more questions.
We got a price.
Everything's got price.
I mean, apparently not that guitar doesn't have a price, but other than that, we got prices. No.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Great question.
You know,
I'm
can
sure
I go
we'll
first?
Because three different answers.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So I made the error of taking orders where I wasn't. I didn't have the ability to produce those numbers, you know, in a timely fashion. And I wish that I hadn't. So I think there's a couple of things at play here. So there's one is just, you know, have you got the physical time to do it? But I also think that when I say decline in offers, I mean, you know, respectfully decline in offers, as in, you know, unfortunately my books are closed or something like that, you know, not just like, fuck you, I'm not making you a knife. You know what I mean? I think that can build up the people's passion for wanting your knives, I think, because people want what they can't have. So I think by not taking on the orders and, you know, limiting yourself to something that you can manage comfortably, I think what that will do is, well, first of all, you're going to be making a more quality product because you know you're not rushing, you know you've got no pressure, you're doing as you should be. But secondly, I think for the demand for your knives will grow, so that what that could then mean is that your prices can grow with that. If you're selling, it's supply and demand. If you're selling at your current rate and you could sell twice as many, I mean, the obvious thing there is to raise your prices a little, just to get that flow correct. And the flow is never going to be the same throughout the year, unfortunately, because there's going to be peaks and troughs in everybody's business. But that's the difficult bit, finding where you sit in the market. But I think, yeah, turning down work when you don't have the ability to produce them is the wise thing to do.
What do you think, Braco?
I think... I feel like I, very similarly to Craig, made the mistake of taking on custom orders when I should have probably pivoted to a different model. I think much earlier than I did, I should have pivoted to the newsletter. I think that's the beauty of the newsletter, is it gives you somewhere to send people without overpromising yourself. And it also creates the flexibility for you to then kind of make what you want to make and put it out there to the community. If you know what people are interested in demand and what's in demand of your work, then those are things that you can make, or you can kind of, you know, piecemeal take them. Who is it? Our friend Josh Scott, actually, he opens like a certain number of slots for how many custom orders he does in a certain period of time, whether it's half a year or a whole year. And then once those slots fill, he closes down his books and he starts making stuff. He also finds time for life inside of that. And I think part of that is why he is kind of designated these slots, so that he's figured out what kind of time he needs for making knives and what kind of time he needs for his family and life outside of knives. And I think it's a great, I think it's a great model that works for him. But I think personally, for myself, I think the angle I took, or the, I guess the option I took, was to start raising my prices. But as you raise your price, you start to narrow kind of the field of people that have the ability to afford your work. And I think what I wish I had done is actually not have driven up my price basically as quickly as I possibly could, because in my mind, I thought, oh, the more money I can get for my work, the higher the prices. That's some sort of like validation of for me in some way. But the reality is I probably should have kept my prices a little bit lower. And now I've kind of pigeonholed myself because I hate the idea of bringing prices back down. And so, I don't know, it's kind of tricky because we're not a big box manufacturer making TVs and shit like that, where the prices can fluctuate all over the place. And so I think the wiser move would have, instead of raising prices, to have had better control over the orders that I was taking. And honestly, I think really making good use of a newsletter would have made a big difference for me in my flexibility. Because then, like Craig was saying, you know, then people have more desire for the thing they can't get a hold of. And then so when a newsletter goes out, they're really excited. And then, yeah, they're excited about getting... Potentially, I guess it depends on the knives, but you see these drops, like you see Bloodroot blades. Our friend over at Boot Hill does a great job with the knife drops. Like, we got lots of guys that do these knife drops. Neil Kamimura fucking slaying it.
Well, let's just stop right here and say that these are also not everybody's has the success that the people that you just mentioned have.
Sure. But I'm saying,
Neil Kamimura. I can't do
that. No, I'm not saying that either. But I'm saying that there is an opportunity, like when your demand exceeds your ability to work, that's when you have an opportunity to pivot into one of these other models. I'm not saying that all of a sudden any of us are Neil Kamimura or Bloodroot Blades or any of those guys. But it's just, it creates opportunity to have control rather than chasing them. I felt like for the longest time I was chasing custom orders. Then at a certain point when my demand exceeded my ability to make stuff, that's when I should have realized, oh, now I have the flexibility to now make stuff as I want rather than chasing custom orders, make what I want and then send that out to the newsletter. And then people be excited about that and then buying that up and just keep going through cycles of making stuff and doing a newsletter drop. And then, I mean, that's how that started for all those guys. And it wasn't selling out right away. But it's the model that seemed to work best for them, and they've been killing it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think particularly in this case, because this guy is saying that, you know, the demand is greater than he can build, so this would be the perfect avenue, yeah.
Well, you guys know that I'm going to disagree. For my opinion on it all, is that I think the most important part is to figure out what your direction is in terms of what you're expecting out of your business. Is this something you want? Do you want to grow? I think that, you know, the examples you guys have mentioned have been amazing. And I, you know, they're friends, they're great people, they're doing their thing, but their direction would be different from everybody's direction is going to be different. Like I see this as a business. And I'm trying to grow this business as fast and best as I can. And what I'm doing is I'm looking at ways in which to help my production. I had a guy who worked for me for a long time. I've always had interns. I've always had people to help make sure that I can help with the execution of meeting demand. Now I'm working on 30 different orders. And we have given a very specific lead time on them all, and everyone's fine, you know. And I'm making sure that I'm communicating with the customers in regards to when they're at the expectation of when it's going to arrive. I think that books are closed is telling people, don't bother me again, you know, or you know, I don't know. There's something about it that's just like, are you in business or not? So, my opinion is to look at why the production is, what do you need to invest in to get your production to the point where you can meet the expectations of your customers. So is it another hand, pair of hands? Is it figuring out a way to water jet cut your knives? Or is it somebody to heat treat? Or somebody cutting out the labor? Figuring out ways in which you can be as efficient as possible so your turnaround is faster within the confines of what you can do as a person, within the confines of making sure that you're not working, you know, 18 hours a day and you're, you know, dead and you're miserable and you hate it. So my opinion is back in the day, Tony and I, when we worked for Charlie Palmer, sometimes we had to like overbook the restaurant, and they would say, the boss would say to us, make the mess and just clean it up. You can make the mess, just got to clean it up. So I say make the mess and clean it up.
Yeah, no, very valid too. Yeah. Okay, so the answer to that one is we don't really know. We're all given different answers.
I think here's the real thing. You're in a desirable position. You're in a desirable position that what you're setting out to be is you're dealing with a problem that people want. So that's a positive. It's just figuring out how to do it in a way that you feel comfortable doing. That's really, I think all three of us are saying, is you have to figure out a way that it's comfortable for you. You know, the way Mareko thinks about it is the same as me and the same as Craig. We're trying to do it what makes the most amount of sense and what we can feel comfortable doing ourselves. And that's all you got to do. I say fucking make the mess. Just clean it up. Just clean it up. All you have to do is clean it up.
Okay, I'm gonna tell everybody about where they can go to buy all the shit that they need.
Yeah, you can tell you where to go.
Whether it's steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and everything else you could possibly need. Is it maritimeknifesupply.com?
Unbelievable.
Also, Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Go take a look. Always got cool stuff in. And we always say it, but Lawrence is a good dude as well. So go help him out. Maritimeknifesupply.com. And you'll be amazed at everything that they have.
Unbelievable. We got some great feedback from our wonderful listeners. If you want to send a message, audio message, or you want to send some feedback or some questions, or we need beefs, I need beefs, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram and DM it to us. This one comes from our man, JV Custom Made. Just came in. Massive thanks to you all for the sacrificial Corby bolt tip to keep the stone wash finish on my spine and on the tang. It worked a treat. Love the learning I get from you guys. So remember a couple of weeks ago, JV Custom Made wanted to do some stone wash finish, but he wanted the spine of the knife to get stone wash finish, and he was afraid of the handles getting fucked up in the tumbler, and Mareko gave him the old sacrificial Corby.
That's the way.
That's the way. It's the old sacrificial Corby. Robert Pierce says, I was listening to the new episode on the way home tonight. One of the guys, Yako's KTP GPT, which he said, Yako's KTP GPT, if I remember, was a guy was basically saying, I don't know why you call yourself a bladesmith and all that shit.
Oh, yeah.
What Robert says is Yako's KTP GPT made me think of some of the best advice I'd ever heard. Don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't get advice from. That is fucking true as shit.
Yeah.
It's classic. Yeah.
That's legitimately like the, you know what you should do situation where somebody says they find out you're a knife maker and they say, oh, you know what you should do? You should make swords. All right. Okay. We don't get that anymore. We don't get the, you know what we should, you know what you should do.
I think people know not to bother us with that shit.
I know, but it's a funny bit though. You know, we had all sorts of bits going on where they're like, you know what you should do?
You know what you should do.
Do you ever have any of those old sounders still, or you got rid of them?
Let's have a look.
Best sounders in the game.
Don't touch that dial. You're listening to the best.
I don't think I do. No, it's
all, oh, you don't have so the Jay-Z one? You used to have one that sounded like a mix between Jay-Z and... who just did that? Was that you, Mareko?
Yeah.
Do it. He goes...
the Jay-Z laugh.
We had the Jay-Z one. We had a Yeah, we had a Schwarzenegger one. We had a couple, didn't we?
Yeah, those are good. I remember those. Eric Markman, our man from the Netherlands. Good old Eric Markman. He says, you guys were talking about last week, Mareko was talking about the JS testing. And yeah. Eric is a journeyman smith from the ABS. And he says, my scales on my JS test knife were put on with double-sided tape.
Perfect.
That Dutch double-sided tape, boy. I mean, you could stick your nuts to your leg. Nothing going anywhere. I don't know where I'm going. That's strike three, I guess. No laughs again. I mean, I don't know what else to do. All right, Honed by Jones. Honed by Jones says, I love the truing tool from Tormek. I bought it, and I didn't use it for a long time. Finally used it a couple months ago, and my head was like, Warren, what the hell? This thing is great. Should have been doing it all along. So just to let you know, if you have a Tormek is the great water sharpening stone system from Sweden, and they have a truing tool, and the truing tool fits on the universal bar. You set it, and then what it does is you turn the machine on, and then it goes back and forth, and it basically trues the wheel so you don't have an egg. And it's incredibly satisfying. It's like a good deep scratch in your back. You know, it really feels good. It's like ASMR the whole nine yards, and it makes your wheel really good. So with that said, guys, if you're gonna sharpen your wheels, if you're gonna sharpen your knives, might as well use a Tormek. There you go. And then you use the truing tool, don't you, Craig? Or Craig? Have we lost Craig? Or he's gone somewhere? He hasn't.
He's probably filling up his pint glass.
He is probably filling up his pint glass. With that said, let's just say we'll keep going. We'll see what happens. It's still recording. We'll see if Craig comes back. We'll see. The next one comes from our man, Nick Alpin. Nick Alpin says, Craig, we can't hear. He just wrote, I glitched, and now my audio isn't coming through. I hear you. So I don't know what you should do, Craig, but we're going to keep moving. We cannot hear you whatsoever. Nick Alpin says, hey, guys, I'm catching up on KTP episodes and getting back into the shop after a while. A word to all the guys out there, look out for your health. See your physician and get your blood work done. Stress caught up to me and I had a heart attack at 49. 0 out of 10 recommend. That's not good. Best to the crew and the listeners.
Yeah.
Don't have a heart attack, guys. That's the key. All right, so now Mareko's muted. Craig's no gone, and I'm up by here by myself.
I'm here. Okay.
You go to the doctor, don't you?
It's been a while, but yeah. I'm 41, and now I'm at that age where I got to start doing all the screenings.
You're 41?
Yeah.
Look at you.
I'm spry, young. You're a full decade ahead of me.
Plus.
I'll take it.
You'll take
it. Don't worry. I'll be there soon.
You won't. Are we waiting for you, Craig, or are we going to keep going? You can send a message if not. Otherwise, why don't we do this? Why don't we go back to our questions? If you want to send us some questions, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. He's keep going. Motherfucker's gone. He's back. He's gone. He's just like, you know, putting his pajamas back on, and he's going to go for it. But before we get to it, let's just say a little. I got a story to tell you guys. I don't know if you know this, Mareko, but I had a bet with our friends from Damasteel.
Okay.
I had a bet. Now, if you know, Damasteel is the number one stainless Damascus maker, and they're made in Sweden. Stuff is beautiful. And if you go to damasteel.se, you can put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you get 10% off everything. And my suggestion is to follow our friend Josh Prince, who says, don't be a fool, use Damasteel. Now, what I had did was, and I didn't talk about it because I was a little nervous, I made a bet with our friend Carly Jenkins.
Okay.
Carly is a huge, huge Toronto fan. She's a fan of the Toronto Blue Jays. She's a fan of the Toronto Raptors, and The Toronto Raptors and the Knicks were playing against each other for the NBA Cup, which is a big basketball tournament, the quarterfinals, and blah, 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 blah. So she was talking a lot of shit. And I was talking way more shit. And we made a bet. And the bet was, she said, I'll put up a bar of steel if they win. And then I countered with, I said, if the Knicks win, I'll take your bar of steel. And if the Raptors win, I will give you I'll give Damasteel a year of ad reads on full blast. Well, guess what? The fucking Knicks won. So we're getting the steel sent down to Florentine Kitchen Knives, another giant Knicks fan. So many thanks to my friends. Carly's very sad. However, you know, that's the way the ball bounces.
Yeah, that's great that she held up her end of the bargain. Not that I doubted it, but that's
not impressive. That you doubted it, but I mean, you know, you can't be talking all that shit and not, you know, I'm a big mouth too. So it's like, you know, I was going to say something. Many thanks to Carl. So let's get back
Craig
to
just
some...
chimed in. He said Jeff wouldn't have. So I think Craig's still listening in.
Jeff wouldn't have. Craig, do you want me to send you another link? I can send you a link. I mean, I don't know how to do this, but we'll just keep going. You want to read the next one from St. Gallego Armory?
I do, but I will like to note that I think it's ironic and hilarious that you give Craig and I a lot of shit when you're not here, and we blast through those questions, and now all you want to do is blast through the questions.
Hey, you know what? I'm happy to do. I got weird news too. We could do one more question. I could give you the weird news.
All right, let's do another question. We'll do some weird news.
I got us through the listener feedback too. We only went through 1, 2, 3, 4. We only went through 5, 6 questions. Right. Don't worry about that.
All right. No, you're great. No, I'm just teasing you. All right, from St. Galgano Armory. He says, hey guys, it's Keith from Kentucky again with another question. When designing a project, I draw a lot of inspirations, you'll love that word, other makers, history.
Oh, shit!
A lot of inspiration from other makers, history, and by using blanks. How can I become more proficient and design my own knives and create my signature style? Love the show and everything you guys do.
How fortuitous of a question is that?
Wow. Yeah.
Go ahead. Start in.
I mean, again, I don't think there's anything wrong from drawing heavy influence or inspiration or basically cloning other people's shit. But I think ideally, as creative people, we want to have a sense of authorship over our work. Not just that we made it, but that we've come up with something different or unique, or that something that stands apart. And so I think there's nothing wrong by kind of cloning people's shit as a starting point, but I think by learning from copying other people's stuff and just making mistakes. I mean, for years I sculpted the handle for Bob Kramer's knives. That's all I ever did. But when I first started out doing my own knife making, the first thing I want to do is distinguish my work from Bob Kramer's knives as much as I could. Now, you're obviously limited within the medium of a chef's knife, but I think I've done a good job of doing that. And a lot of that had to do with the handle profile design, the interface between the integral bolster and the blade, eventually incorporating and introducing the faceted aspect of the Western style handle. All these things were crucial for me, I feel like, in designing my own thing. But I did have, I learned a lot about handle sculpting and controlling a machine and doing different contouring and shaping by doing, basically cloning the work of somebody else. It looks like Craig is chiming in here.
And I'm going to answer. And then when I come back after my answer, Mareko, you are going to read Craig's messages. In a Welsh accent. Okay.
I don't even know what a Welsh accent sounds like.
Go figure something out. You got to do something. You got to make sure that people know that Craig is still here and he's writing. Here's what I would suggest. And for me, everything was always about, you know, from experience as a sculptor, I really felt as though the way you do your signature style is you start with one thing and then you slowly make alterations based on how you want it to be over time. Not the same one. You're doing evolutions. Everyone changes. And then just slight changes. And then you start to kind of like decide what matters to you in terms of your design. What is the thing that you're speaking to? When you're painting, you're making sculpture, there'll be something that really speaks to you, and then you really kind of hyper-focus on a specific point or side or size or color. You really need to focus on your work and always look at the piece, not look at, you know, other people. I don't like the looking at other people's shit. I don't like that at all. I think that it becomes, and maybe it's just because I have the luxury of having to work in my own way. I remember I had a girlfriend who was taking a sculpture class, and she was very influenced by the work that I was doing. And the teacher fucking knew she was my girlfriend and says, "You need to stop hanging out with Jeff so much." And it was embarrassing to her because it was just like clearly she had, you know, inadvertently just made a fucking Jeff sculpture, you know, based off of what I was doing in the class. And it really like, put her off, but in the best possible way, because, you know, otherwise she was, you know, she, it was embarrassing to her. It was, for sure, you know, embarrassing to me too. I was just like, I do a better job than that. Jesus Christ. And then, but at the same time, I think you need to focus on a direction, and then you kind of focus on the things that make yours, yours. And, yeah. That's the most important thing. Now, you don't have to do the accent if you don't want to. What Craig, who is still here, has said is he says, "I would use CAD, play with screens, or even paper and cut those bad boys out. It's a cheap way to design and find your own style. It's like I am AI or or CRAIG. And then he wrote, based on my lame attempt at his accent, he wrote, "That's shit." So... yeah. All right. I mean, you know, can't get much better than that. Yeah. Can you do us a favor? Can you tell us about your grinder?
My Broadbeck grinder. I love my Broadbeck grinder. The great machine made for makers by a maker, our friend Ryan Broadbeck. In fact, he's very great. He's a very good dude. I always love catching up with him. But the machine is really handy in the shop. It's really kind of like the Swiss Army knife of the shop. You got, with all the different tool arms and attachments they offer, you have like 7 or 8 or 9. I can't even keep count anymore. How many different machines you have in one? And they are also cross-platform. So say you already have a chassis that you're happy with, but you need different tool arms. They have a bunch of different tool arms as well as ways to attach those to your machine. So go check out our guys over at Broadbeck. Make sure you put in Knife Talk 10 when you check out, whether you're getting a package, whether you're getting tool arms, whether you're getting a chassis, whatever you're getting from them, abrasives. Go use the Knife Talk 10 at checkout to save yourself 10%. BroadbeckIronworks.com.
I had a very nice conversation with Ryan, and he said that the Black Friday sale was amazing. So he was super duper happy with how that turned out, and that's really, really great. So, I mean, Craig ain't here, and usually what happens is we got a little couple of minutes to burn, so I figured we'd do some weird news.
Let's do some weird news.
Weird news. We did a lot of AI stuff before, but I'm going to read off some stories and see which of you want to do it. A judge in northern Greece has imposed a suspended one-month sentence on a man convicted of disturbing his neighbors by repeatedly sneaking onto their property to smell their shoes. That's okay. One. Okay. There's, "I wore a fake mustache to a job interview. What happened next was unbelievable." That sounds interesting. I'm waiting for you. Dairy farmer crushed to death by thousands of wheels of cheese.
I feel like that's pretty straightforward. Let's do the mustache one. That sounds very unusual.
Mustache ride. Okay. A man who's seeking advice for sharing... A man's entire life turned into a comedy show after being forced to wear a fake mustache to a job interview. He explained how he glued a fake mustache onto his face as part of a Halloween costume and has been struggling to get it off ever since. It turns out his roommate tricked him into using super heavy-duty glue, meaning it was stuck onto him for quite some time, he said on Reddit. The next day, I wasn't able to get it off. I was majorly annoyed, and there wasn't anything I could do. I had a job interview, and I had to show up with this fake mustache. I had rehearsed a stupid line on how to make people laugh, and this is how I like to test how healthy an office culture was. Pop up. Hold on a second. The interviewer, my new boss, didn't realize it was fake. He had a mustache the same style as my fake one. The interview went well, and it ended up with some comments of how great my mustache looked. Some days later, he managed to get the mustache off and decided to re-glue it in place of his... for his first day, he wanted his boss to recognize and remember him. And he added, I was probably stupid, but I decided to wear the fake mustache on my first day of work. This guy's a fucking dipshit. The whole thing's a dipshit story. I wish I didn't even bring it up.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Here's what you do. You fucking tell that you see if you can. You see if you can delay the interview. I would not hire this guy. Would not. Guy came in with a fake mustache. I would be like, what? Oh, man, Halloween costume. You should have. No, this is terrible. Terrible story. What do you think?
I don't understand why he glued it back on.
Because he wanted his boss to remember him.
He didn't get hired for the fucking mustache, hopefully. Unless he's in some sort of porn or something.
He's a fucking asshole.
He should have just taken it off. And then if anybody asked about it, he'd be like, oh, I shaved it. That's it.
The whole
thing's
idiotic. Idiotic. I'm going to go back to AI. Craig says next week's after show should be that P. Diddy documentary. It was crazy. Have you seen that P. Diddy documentary?
I haven't watched it yet. I'm tempted to, but just like, I don't know. All the thing about everything he did, it just weirds me out. And I don't take a ton of pleasure in watching those. I know people who love watching like the documentaries about kill cults and all this kind of shit. And I just,
yeah, Craig, he's a ghoul.
I struggle with that stuff.
Yeah.
He's a ghoul.
He's a ghoul.
I will say I've seen a lot of posts about 50 Cent and how he put this whole thing together. And how it was just like a massive fuck you to P. Diddy. And so that has actually made me more curious about watching this.
I have no interest. Hillary was just like, maybe we should watch it. I'm just like, I just don't care. Craig says, me, I love that shit. He is such a... Craig Lockwood is our resident ghoul. I mean, it is like... He has ruined people's lives by making movie suggestions that have really freaked them out. We also have Angle Grinder Community. Angle Grinder. The amount of people who are getting arrested, who are using... So the big thing is it's not just the Louvre heist that people are using angle grinders. The big thing is bike theft. I don't know if you know that or not, but in Europe, bike theft is the number one... I'm trying to find a good story. These guys are using right angle grinders to cut bike locks. It's crazy to the point where there's a lot of people who are using I'm not doing a good job with this, but we have a lot of articles about people actually using them as weapons and
oh my God.
Oh dude, I think the right angle grinder, once they came up with the battery powered right angle grinder, I don't think they ever thought that it would be used in this manner whatsoever.
Sure. Have you seen the, what is it? It's like a wood sculpting attachment, which basically is like chainsaw teeth on a spinning circle.
Did I ever tell you that story? I was talking about my roommate, not Miles, before, my college roommate, and we started using right angle grinders, and then they started selling those were very regular. And it was a right angle grinder disc with a chainsaw blade. Chainsaw. Wasn't it like a chainsaw blade? It was a chainsaw. What do they call it if it's just like a...
It's just a teeth.
It's like a band, right? What do they call that?
The chainsaw.
It's like a band. So it was the chainsaw on the thing. So he spent all this time in Indonesia learning parasitic wood carving. Parasitic wood carving is where you see the tree and what, you know, wherever the branches are sticking out. He was in Indonesia doing parasitic wood carving, and then he was in Papua New Guinea working on like these bis poles, which are kind of parasitic wood carving where the tree tells you what it is, you know. Comes back to the United States, gets this big block of wood. I'm working in the shop with him. I'm in the welding place, and he's got this fucking right angle grinder with this chainsaw blade on. And we're just making jokes, being like, this is the most dangerous fucking thing I've ever seen in my entire life, you know?
Yeah.
No, and you're not using a
guard.
Guard. You're not using guard because it's bigger than the disc, right?
Of course. Yes.
All of a sudden, you know, he's going. There's fucking sawdust is going all over the shop. This thing is like sending sawdust everywhere. It's like a nuclear bomb has gone off. It's just sawdust. He's going after it. All of a sudden, it stops. I hear this, and then I hear Fades. I turn around. He called me Fades. Fucking thing hit a knot. It banged off his hand, and then ended up. Thank God, he usually would wear like sweatpants and stuff. Thank God he had a pair of pants with metal zipper. It caught on the metal zipper of his pants and fucking tied itself off before cutting his dick off. He cut the tendons in his hand, the top of the hand, cut the tendons off. I unplugged this goddamn disastrous fucking thing. Guy's lucky to, lucky to be alive, frankly.
Jeez.
And then I took him to the hospital. We stayed with him, and they tied everything back up and everything like that. But it was like the worst thing I'd ever seen in my life. And this thing is just like, you know, alligatoring up the you know, crotch zipper.
Yeah. Oh my god.
But I don't think that those shits should be allowed anymore. I don't. They're like just too dangerous. But the biggest issue these days. And I actually talked to, angle grinder crime refers to the use of portable angle grinders by thieves to quickly cut through high security locks. Bike theft is the most common context where thieves target U-locks and heavy chains quickly. Battery-powered angle grinders are favorable for their portability and effectiveness in hardened steel locks. These crimes occurred in public spaces, sometimes in broad daylight. Here's the funny thing is, like, if you were to walk down the street and you were to see somebody with a right angle grinder cutting some steel, I don't necessarily think this person was up to no good, right? I think it was a construction guy, you know, or like, that's not, you know,
cutting the lock off a bike
or anything. I mean, maybe if the guy's bodies, you know how the, you know, I would think that a lot of people would be, they wouldn't blatantly think that it was theft. You never see a guy with a fucking grinder shooting sparks all over the place. You think he's a construction worker.
Sure. Yeah.
But apparently it's the number one thing right now. High value targets where bikes are frequent. The same method using angle grinders that's a different. That was the Louvre. These crimes occur in public spaces, sometimes in broad daylight, creating dangers for witnesses as thieves might use the grinders as to threaten people. People have been using the grinders as weapons as well.
Well, not if they have loose or baggy clothes on. It'll just get alligatored up into the thing, and then the tool's dead.
It is unbelievable. So,
I will say I have used an angle grinder to cut the lock off of a bike. When I lived in Denver, I needed a form of transportation, and the apartment I lived at, I asked them about this bike that is parked out there because I had seen it for like the first month I was there, and it's like, what's the deal with this bike? And they're like, oh, we don't know. It's been there, been locked up there for like almost at least a year. And so I was like, fuck it, I'm cutting that thing off, and that's going to become my bike. And so I did exactly that. I borrowed an angle grinder. I borrowed an angle grinder from a friend. I didn't have one. And I cut the lock off, and that bike became my bike. And I actually still have that bike. I love that bike.
So did you kind of steal it?
I freed it from being locked up to a handrail.
That's what all these fucking crooks say. Liberated it. You liberated it.
I mean, the fucking thing shackles had been sitting there for a year. It's perfectly good bike. So
look at you. Yeah, look at you loopholing it up. I'm with you. Yeah, you got it. Look, it was there. Nobody said anything. I mean, it was just gonna sit there. Look at you.
Craig said bar, were you looking for the word bar, the chainsaw bar? Is there like a chainsaw bar attachment?
I was thinking of the chainsaw chain, not the bar, but Craig, you still here? What was I going to ask you about? I still think, he's there. He goes, I'm afraid I can't answer that question. I've been programmed to be anti-political. I am, however, going to take all of your jobs. All of your jobs. Yeah, Craig he's just typing up jokes. What was I going to say? I was going to say that I think in 2026, I think that we should get back to, we used to do, with Damasteel, we do the Damasteel build along. I think that we should do the right angle grinder challenge, and you can only use a right angle grinder to make a knife.
Ooh.
That's it. I figured that's easy. I already figured that out. That's super duper easy. You full tang knife, you can only, and obviously you're going to heat treat it. You got to heat treat it, but you can only see how far you can go only using a right angle grinder. Okay. I bet people could go pretty far.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think so. When Neil Kamimura first, I know we've been talking about Neil this episode, but anyways, when he first started out, all he had, he didn't have a belt grinder. And the only thing he was proficient at from doing so much body work was using an angle grinder for cutting and sculpting. And so that's what he used for like the first couple of years or first year of making knives. He was just using a fucking angle grinder to sculpt the handles, grind the blade, all that stuff. That's what he knew.
Well, you know where you can go if you want to get some stuff for knife making, if you're thinking to yourself, I can do all that. I want you to go to Texas Farrier Supply and use the promo code KNIFETALK10 to get you 10% off all your supplies to get you squared away. And you know what? I've had enough. Craig's typing. We miss his sweet voice. And we've done enough.
Let's do it.
So what else? What do you got going on for this coming week? You have anything coming up? Last week we played the harps, and what are you looking forward to next week? So, what are you looking forward to next week?
Sounds just like harps.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I'm looking forward to not being sick. I'm looking forward to getting some knives mailed out. And I'm looking forward to spending some quality time with my kiddo.
That's good. Does he have any more wrestling tournaments coming up?
Yeah, I think he's got another one coming up this weekend on Sunday again.
Wow, he does it once a week, huh?
Yeah.
How's he doing?
He's all right. He got a pin this last week. I think the problem is like
Mazel Tov.
Yeah. It's just the way the coaches coach is not very, I guess, friendly for newer wrestlers, because they're like, first you do the thing, and then you do follow with the thing, and that's it. It's right. Like, can we break this down into like three or four steps?
Well, he got a pin, though.
He did get a pin.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So he's getting things put together, and it's a matter of figuring out how to connect the different moves. So you know, you do one move, and then you got to follow it with another move, and then you follow it with another move, and if that move doesn't work, then you try this other move, and all that shit. And so it's just learning how to learning how to make it, you know, a very intuitive thing, and it's just, that just takes time.
Well, I like the fact that he's sticking with it. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, every week before a tournament, he gets super anxious about the tournament and stressed out, and then always afterwards, he's very happy that he'd done it.
Craig wants to know if he's elbow dropped you in the balls yet. Craig, shout out to you for sticking with it. Shout out for you. Craig wants to know, has he dropped elbowed you in the balls yet?
Yeah. No, actually, I just realized this could be a great chance to, you should call Craig up on speakerphone.
Oh, maybe that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Well,
he can hear us through the computer, and he can talk through your speakerphone. You were talking about doing that, right?
Let me see. Taking phone calls. Let me see what I can do. Just
taking phone calls. Yeah.
Let's see if we can do that.
No, he hasn't elbow dropped me in the balls yet. I've actually been very fortunate that I haven't had a lot of ball damage, I guess, as a father to a wily child.
Taking phone calls.
Well, Craig can hear us through the computer. That's the benefit.
We'll see.
Hey,
you there? Hey, can you hear us?
I can hear you, yeah.
Oh, they're perfect.
Oh, wow.
What happened?
A very strange delay going on, but I can hear you. Yeah, I don't know. Everything made a strange noise, and I can hear myself through the machine. I can hear you through the machine, but I'm not popping up in the app. I don't know why.
Well, we missed you. We do like the comments you made. Do you have any wrestling questions for Miracle when we get the fuck out of here?
No. I'm not a wrestling fan, no.
All right, so what is your? You want to play the harps and see what you want to do for the week?
Let's see if we can do it. Shall we? Let's have a look.
I'm playing through. I wish I thought.
What's my dream for the week? For this big console to arrive and for it to work and all the rest of it. Relaxing weekend. I mean, it's been tough. The kids have started school, so they're all really tired. So we've got no plans. So we literally could stay in the house, stay warm, watch loads of films, movies, and just do nothing. Yeah.
What are your TV recommendations these days?
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, we undoubtedly watch K-pop Demon Hunters about 9 times during the weekend. It's all kid-led at the moment. It's all about the kids. So, yeah, we watch Elf a million times. We watch K-pop Demon Hunters a million times, I'm sure of it.
Have you seen The Beast and Me? That seems like it's a you type of show.
No.
A Netflix show. It's not for the fucking kids. It's for you. Okay. You're a ghoul. You like ghoulish shit.
I should take a look, yeah.
All right. Well, with that said, you want to send us off, Craig?
Yes, thank you all. I don't know how this is being routed at the moment, right? I'm going up to some sort of satellite. I'm coming back down to my own house, back into a satellite, across the Atlantic. I don't know what's going on. But thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.